Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time beverage taster.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that is an equal opportunity movie review site, which means we love movies of all genres, from the most intellectually challenging to the most mind-bendingly entertaining, though admittedly, sometimes we can find both qualities in the same movie-going experience. But let me add quickly, that didn't quite happen this past week. Oh, both films we saw proved to be somewhat entertaining, not just the newest variation on the same old Man of Steel story, James Gunn's Superman, but also the attempt of Gareth Edwards in Jurassic World Rebirth to bring some fresh blood, cinematically and metaphorically, to a three-decade-old series. But are they mind-bendingly entertaining? That's what the three of us will debate, beginning with another visit to the town of Metropolis and the man from Krypton who sees himself as the savior of his adopted planet Earth. That man would be, of course, called Kal-El slash Clark Kent, but would be known most universally as Superman. Created in comic strip form in 1938 by the writer Jerry Siegel and artist Joe Shuster, and the star not just of comics but also of TV shows, a number of cartoons, and feature films, the character has been reinvented once again in the film that writer-director James Gunn has titled simply enough, Superman. Based both on Gunn's imagination and on the many alternative histories that DC Comics fans have read over the past decade, this story has our caped hero, the new version played by David Corenswet, dealing both with his arch-rival Lex Luthor, played by Nicholas Holt, and with the mixed emotions caused by the newfound knowledge that his mission on Earth might not be what he once thought it was. The other traditional characters are around as well, from Lois Lane, played by Rachel Brosnahan, Jimmy Olsen, played by Skylar Gisondo, Editor Perry White, played by Wendell Pierce, and Ma and Pa Kent, played respectively by Neva Howell and Pruitt Taylor Vince. But some of the most notable characters are other so-called metahumans, each from the DC universe, such as the Green Lantern, played by Nathan Fillion, but especially Mr. Terrific, played by Eddie Gathegi. Gunn gives us, too, the obligatory impressive CGI effects, but his greatest feat is in how he revives the Superman franchise, giving it some of, if not quite all, the comic dramatic energy that he did to 2014's Guardians of the Galaxy. Kudos, too, to the addition of the Superdog Crypto.
And so, I mean, obviously, this is quite a departure from the last Superman we got in feature film
with
format, at least.
Henry Cavill
in the Zack Snyder movies. And this Superman is unmistakably James Gunn, which means it has, you know, kind of a mix of earnestness and goofy punchlines, some of which work better than others. And I sort of walked out of this version of Superman a little bit dazed because it's an extremely busy, extremely unfocused movie. It kind of feels like it's every idea that James Gunn ever had about making his own Superman movie kind of all thrown at the wall. And some of it sticks and some of it doesn't so much. And I will say, even though I'm not in love with this version of Superman, I still think nothing can beat the 78 Richard Donner, Christopher Reeve one. I think it's reputation as the best of these movies is intact.
Isn't that the case with all these franchises, though?
And we'll be talking about another one in the second half of the show. I will say, though, that after, especially from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the string of really impersonal and obviously tinkered with movies, it's almost disorienting to see a superhero epic that's so obviously driven by a single authorial voice. I mean, all the way through this, I'm like, this is very much a James Gunn movie. And, you know, there are things I like about his style and things I don't like about his style. And that applies to Superman. I think that it's trying for, as a lot of the past Superman iterations have done, it's trying to grapple with a lot of contemporary themes. And I do think it ultimately is doing too much. You've got the
some are subtle and some not so subtle.
Yeah, some are really not subtle. I mean, you've got the geopolitical tensions between these fictional nations, which could be stand-ins for any number of real-life countries at war right now. it's dealing with internet bots and social media and internet trolls and keyboard warriors. And I kept wondering, I wonder if this is James Gunn's way of getting back at the people that say bad things about him on the internet.
Not to mention smart rich guys who think they can control the world.
Well, yes. And not only that, but this idea that Superman, and I mean, we saw it happen in the actual real world Earth news, this idea that Superman is being used as sort of a political distraction from things that actually matter in the world. I think the plot device in here that was most intriguing to me in terms of, oh, well, that's kind of a new angle on Superman, at least in terms of the movies. There's millions of comic books I've never read, so maybe they have dealt with this before. But the idea that there's this recording of Superman's parents that has been sort of like reconstructed and retranslated, and it kind of makes everyone question the real nature of his mission and who he is, and overlooking the fact that I don't know how particularly convincing the idea that everyone would turn on him so quickly is, I do think there is something there, this idea that there is a fine line between a benevolent, all-powerful being and a not-so-benevolent, all-powerful being. I thought there was some interesting stuff going on there, and it paralleled with, why are you rolling your eyes at me? This is a perfectly reasonable thing to bring up. Superman stands in for all kinds of things.
I'm not rolling my eyes at you for anything of that. I'm just thinking that...
How does his eyes roll play out on radio anyway? Well, I had to call it out.
My idea is simply that we all create heroes just simply to break them down. So I'm agreeing with you.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Right. But don't be so defensive.
I'm just saying, I thought it actually paralleled pretty nicely with Lex Luthor as this guy who has
Nicholas
all
Holt
of these,
at his best.
I don't know about that, but he's got all these resources at his disposal that he could be doing good things with, and he chooses not to. So again, there's tons of stuff going on in this movie. I can't even believe I didn't bring up the dog. I mean, you mentioned the dog, but
really?
He's all over this thing. So yeah, lots of good stuff in here, lots of not so good stuff. I think it's just overstuffed in a lot of ways, but it comes in only at about 2 hours, so I guess I appreciated that part.
Yep, that was good, and always good, as we'll discuss with Jurassic Park. Good to see a summer blockbuster in an air-conditioned theater. So, Superman, it's myth, it's mythology, and so forth. I want to start out by saying that I thought that, you know, the lead was a good choice.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, I mean, like
I was
David
not
Corn
familiar
Sweet.
With
yeah.
him, really, but yeah, so that was a good choice. A little bit equivocal about Rachel Brosnahan. I loved her on Mrs. Maisel, but I'm not so sure that she was the right choice for a romantic interest.
Not at all.
Dan's rolling his eyes again.
Uh-oh.
For the right
reason
this
gonna
time,
be a,
yes.
an eye roller, but yeah. And Nathan, I too like that sort of plot device with the parents because this file had been corrupted and maybe Superman's mission was not as he and we thought it was. I just thought this got a little bit too junked up and busy with all these other characters coming in and, you know, so forth and so on.
Oh, but come on. Mr. Terrific was cool.
I did like Mr. Terrific.
Yeah.
I thought Eddie Gaffigi was a standout.
No, he was. He was good.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned, Mary Pat, you were saying Nicholas Holt at his best. And that was an eye roll by you, Nathan. And I want to say that I thought that's one of the problems. Let me be clear. I love Nicholas Holt. The guy is so good.
Going all the way back to About a Boy.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
he's terrific. But his character seemed out of place here, where everything else going on in James Gunn film is slightly comedic. And you can read the lines any kinds of ways. Nicholas Holt was one note evil, and I felt it was too well. Yeah, but you like that in Dateline too. So.
Well, I don't think that his Lex Luthor, there didn't really feel to be any actual tension between him and Superman, and I think it's because they do spend most of the movie apart.
They're also the same age.
That's the case with previous iterations of Lex Luthor too, but you go back to somebody like Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman.
You know, again, going back to the 78 version where he struck just the right tone between like, he's so goofy that you almost don't take him seriously, but you realize like, oh, but he does have the capacity for evil. And I don't know if Nicholas Holt ever really gets there. As good of an actor as he is, and I think he does a serviceable job. I also just like the fact that, and James Gunn is always good with this, filling his supporting cast with character actors I love seeing. So, like, we mentioned Eddie Gaffigi, but I thought Nathan Fillion was really fun as one version of Green Lantern. I liked seeing people like Frank Grillo and Wendell Pierce and Zlatko Buric from Triangle of Sadness as
one
of these, like, you know, evil world leaders. And again, you mentioned Pruitt Taylor Vince earlier on, but I liked the
portrayal
most touching
of film, yeah, in the most touching moment yeah, in the film yeah. is done by him.
It was good to see him, and I liked the portrayal of Ma and Pa Kent. I thought that was a step up from, like, wasn't it Kevin Costner and Diane Lane in Zack Snyder movies?
Hey,
like,
come on, but Diane Lane can do no wrong.
Yeah,
in
but
my
she's
eyes.
But she's not Ma Kent, you know.
But let's come back to Crypto, because Crypto steals this movie as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, the dog. Whole,
yes, yeah. Crypto.
Or
the
how
dog.
Many Cryptos there were, I don't know.
And there's a, you know, and well, we'll know that there are going to be a million iterations to follow this, including Supergirl, who has like 2 seconds on screen here.
It's just another one of many, many things going on in this busy movie.
Yeah. And that was our discussion of James Gunn's Superman. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss the latest in another familiar movie franchise, Jurassic World Rebirth. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed James Gunn's newest Man of Steel variation, titled simply Superman. Let's now turn to the latest addition to a franchise that was birthed all of 32 years ago. The film we'll be discussing is titled Jurassic World Rebirth, which is a bit strange of a title for a film that is the seventh in the series dating back to 1993's Steven Spielberg-directed Jurassic Park. It's especially strange because even though as directed by Gareth Edwards from a screenplay by David Koepp, it features much the same plotline as the previous six. Yes, the setup is different, this time revolving around a rather ridiculous MacGuffin, a quest to gather DNA from three different neo-dinosaur species in order to create a drug that, the hope is, will solve the main cause of death for most humans, heart disease. So that means we have to have a team, hired by a shady corporate type, played by Rupert Friend, consisting of a mercenary-slash-covert ops specialist, played by Scarlett Johansson, a scientist, played by Jonathan Bailey, and a guy with a boat, played by Mahershala Ali. To get the required Kids in Danger subplot going, screenwriter Kep adds in a divorced father, played by Manuel Garcia Rulfo, who is shepherding, by sailboat, his two daughters and the elder daughter's boyfriend just a bit too close to the island where the targeted neo-dinosaurs still roam free. It's all so predictable, especially who and in what order people will die. And while the CGI is, as always, impressive, causing at least one of us to jump at least twice, the ultimate result is too much of the same old story. For a better time, go back to Spielberg's original. No one could adapt Michael Crichton's novel, The Source of Everything, better than he did, or do much else, to be honest.
Well, Dan, you've told us everything we need to know about Jurassic World Rebirth. And I think maybe they're trying to reboot or rebirth this franchise in some way, but
rebirth,
I don't think it's necessarily going to play out how they hoped or expected. So if we go back to the original, I mean, you know, you think of the actors who were cast in that original with Jeff Goldblum and Laura Dern and Sam Neill, although after the fact, she and Sam Neill have actually talked about how creepy it was that there was such a huge age difference between them and they were supposed to be love interests and so forth. But great actors in the first one. But the best thing was just seeing the dinosaurs. And we were just like so awestruck by the way they kind of, you know, came in and they just roamed about and, you know, so forth and so on. And then we had the children in danger and everything. So here's the problem. So how do you recreate that sense of wonder that I think the first one, at least for its first half, brought to us on the screen? And I don't know, because what happens here is the dinos have kind of gotten out of control. They're hanging out on every street corner, you know, in the city and so forth. And there's this plot device here that just doesn't really work well. I never really understood what was the purpose of this expedition. I mean, supposedly they were gathering these DNA samples from different types of dinosaurs, and they could only be harvested while they were still alive so they could create some medical cure for heart disease and other things. And there was, like, you know, big pharma wanted to do X and other people wanted to do Y, you know, like, so it was sort of the mercenaries versus the missionaries, so to speak, about what's going on here. And so Scarlett Johansson is the quintessential mercenary, and she's being paid big bucks by Rupert Friend's character to go on this expedition to get these dinosaur specimens. Now, let's look at this cast. I mean, this is a pretty A-list cast. I mean, if you look at Jonathan Bailey, who's everywhere from Wicked, Bridgerton, et cetera.
He's a rising guy.
Yeah, right? Mahershala Ali, award-winning actor. Then we have Manuel Garcia Rulfo, who's the Lincoln lawyer, so people might recognize him from there. So they got some good folks in this. But the story is just ridiculous. The screenplay is not good, and that's part of the problem. They have, you know, the Manuel Garcia Rulfo. I actually like that part of this movie the best, which shows you what the other options were, because he is stranded with his two daughters and his older daughter's boyfriend, and he's trying to get them to safety. So I always like those dad, you know, as protector sort of themes that these movies tend to dwell on. But yeah, the whole thing just ultimately falls apart. Dan guessed the exact order in which people would die. So it was pretty predictable in that regard.
Should have put some money down.
The problem is the story was always going to rise and fall on the dinosaurs. And here, they're just too familiar. They turn evil, you know, and we don't care about them. I mean, before, at least I cared about them in some way.
The best part of the dinosaurs, as far as I was concerned, was having New York traffic backed up because there was a dead dinosaur in the streets.
And some of the earlier Jurassic World movies do kind of deal with that idea.
Yeah.
What would happen if dinosaurs were just a daily...
Roam the earth.
Yeah, a daily nuisance. I'll start with a couple of good things about Jurassic World Rebirth. They clearly shot this in some real locations, so there's some nice jungle atmosphere, which I appreciated. I thought some of the dinosaur designs were cool because this is basically like an Island of Dr. Moreau situation where it's all these, you know, reject dinosaurs and these
rogue dinosaurs.
Yeah. Yeah,
and some of them look really cool. And I, again, just the presence of Mahershala Ali in this movie is doing a lot because he is so above this material. He's in his own atmosphere. I mean, I don't know what he's doing in this besides collecting a big paycheck.
Yeah.
Also, him and Scarlett Johansson, their characters get these tragic backstories that amount to absolutely nothing, but there they are, I guess. But yeah, this movie is just so weightless, and it has no thrills in it. You know, you talked about the screenplay not being very good. I don't think Gareth Edwards directs this very well at all. I mean,
well, he has some other failures too.
Yeah, I mean, there is not a single moment of genuine suspense in this movie, and it's
which is what fueled the original.
Yes, the original one you mentioned, the awe of, you know, seeing the dinosaurs. That movie is also extremely scary.
Right. You're it was waiting scary for your children to get eaten.
Well, it was scary when I was a kid, and every time I go back and rewatch it, I'm like, oh yeah, this movie's really scary. And, you know, the original Jurassic Park
and
is
that's, you know, because, you know, for one thing, Spielberg knew how to build to a dramatic moment, then up it, and even up it again.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so you don't have a chance to breathe.
Well, in this movie, Jurassic World Rebirth is so full of nods to the original, which is something that these franchise movies do all the time.
Or feel like they have to do.
You get these little wink-wink kind of references to imagery from the first film. There's even a facsimile of that great kitchen sequence from the original Jurassic Park.
Yes.
They basically just copy it all over again here. And then there are all these obvious references to other Spielberg movies. So all the scenes on the boat near the beginning,
correct,
didn't they feel like the scenes on the orca in Jaws? Mm-hmm. There's this cute little dinosaur that the little girl attracts with candy.
Yeah,
what does that remind you of? Because it feels E.T. to me. There's even the scene where they scale the cliffside and they're dangling off of it. I mean, that just feels like it's right out of Indiana Jones. And that is such a huge mistake because I'm sitting there just wishing that I were watching the better movies instead.
Right.
Also, speaking of candy, this is how bored I was watching this. I started to notice that, like, the only product placements in this movie were candy or snack related. I mean, the whole reason that the dinosaur escapes at the beginning is because of a Snickers bar wrapper, and we get some really beautiful shots of that Snickers wrapper floating around. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, and to go back to the family part, every time those characters showed up, I thought it ground this movie to a dead halt. I understand why they want to put kid characters in Jurassic Park movies because kids love dinosaurs and kids are going to go see this. And it's a very like, you know, it feels like a very four quadrant marketing move. But I didn't think those characters worked at all.
I don't know. For some reason, I liked that. And I think it was just because, you know, it was the father as protector and then the boyfriend who's like the odd person out. And then you're like, oh, so you sort of switch roles.
But, all the comedy okay, with
so,
him, I thought
so
was
this
just,
is a oof. Summer blockbuster. So the screening that we went to was packed. So, I mean, we had to sit down in, you know, front. So why are people going to this movie? Is it nostalgia?
I mean, all the Jurassic Park World movies have been hits. And so that's why they keep churning them out. But I don't think I've ever met a single person who would say that the first Jurassic Park doesn't tower over the rest of them. You know what I mean? I mean, it's so obviously the best one. I have a little affection for, believe it or not, Jurassic Park 3, because that movie does what I wish this one had done, which is it is just a lean kind of drive-in movie. It's just people getting chased by dinosaurs through the jungle. And sometimes that's all I want in a summertime entertainment. And this movie, again, Gareth Edwards, I've liked some of the stuff he's done. He did some good stuff in that Godzilla reboot like a decade ago. But he's just – it's basically like a bad karaoke version.
He's not really a craftsman in the sense that, that this
derivative.
Movie needed something.
I wanted to go back and talk a little bit about the whole family deal with the father and the two daughters. I like Manuel Garcia Rulfo. I don't think anything he can do is
wrong. He's not the problem.
He's not the problem. But I also want to talk about David Iacono, who plays Xavier, the boyfriend, because that character had some depth to him that added to
now
what was
Nathan's
going on.
Given an eye roll. You know?
Exactly.
Well, and the problem too is that there's no real peril there because you're like, well, nothing's going to happen to those kids, so it's just there for. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you there. Know, and I guess.
Well, I think the moral of this story is Jurassic Park still exists. I'm sure you can get a beautiful 4K Blu-ray of it, watch it at home. It has not aged. It is still a classic of this kind of movie. And this is just, it's a copy of a copy of a copy.
Yeah.
Just like the dinosaurs on that mutant island.
Right. That was our discussion of Jurassic World Rebirth. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discuss James Gunn's new look at an old story titled Simply Superman. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words spoken by Adrian Cronauer as portrayed by Robin Williams in Good Morning Vietnam. What a country. Heat, humidity, terrorism. Still, it's better than New York in the summer. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.